Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Joe Zimmer on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be responding to your email questions, and we'll be taking your calls, so keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back with you in just a couple minutes. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Cher Huber. Good afternoon, Cher Huber.
Hello, how are you?
You know, I was just thinking about that and thinking that you might ask me that question.
Uh-huh.
And
well,
I thought you
would check in and see.
Yeah, and I was amazed how much conversation there is around that.
Uh-huh.
About how I'm going to be, how I was, and how I was. Is that really how I am now?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's...
Yeah, and what should you do about how you were so that you can be how you should be soon?
What's the right answer?
Yeah, or are you already okay the way you are? Can we just accept that? I know. It's not a simple question, is it?
Uh-huh. Well, let me bounce it back to you. How are you?
I'm so great.
Great. I knew that was the right answer.
You don't have to give a weather report because it's what I like to do.
Yeah, let's hear.
We're having the most extraordinary weather. There is this huge black cloud that is right over Murphy's.
Oh, wow.
And all around you can see blue sky and puffy white clouds.
Oh, wow.
And right over the top of us is this black cloud, and it's raining.
Uh-huh.
Very, very.
Wow. And it's blue sky everywhere else.
Yeah.
It's like, was it a Charlie Brown cartoon where he walks around and the little rain cloud is just following him around?
That's right. That's right. And it's really good not to take it personally.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
Great.
It's a fun
day. It's great to have you on the air here.
Thank you. It's good. It's good to be home, and it's good to be on the radio.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful. Sherry, we have a caller already.
I'm excited.
Great. Let's jump into it. I'd like to welcome Jolie from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Cher Huber.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for letting me ask a question. I'm so happy I love your show and I love your books, and I'm so happy to be able to talk to you. Thank you.
Well, we're happy that you called to talk to us, so it's a good deal all the way around.
There we go.
Yeah. What's going on?
Well, two things. One, I'm wondering if breathing brings us to the center, is that because it keeps us in the now? Is that why we keep focusing on breathing?
Well, that's a really good question. And there are a lot of reasons for it, actually. It's like, how are you? There's a lot to that. The simplest answer, or the most readily available to us answer that we can find for ourselves, is that we can only focus our attention on one thing at a time. And when we focus our attention on our breath, it's not available to be off doing other kinds of things.
Okay.
Like being in conditioned mind, telling us stories about what happened in the past or what's going to happen in the future. So when the attention is with the breath, when we are focused on the breath, there is a greater ability to be where we are.
Okay.
Okay, so that's a good part of it. Another part of it is that when we are focused on the breath, we tend really to be breathing. That a lot of the way we stay stuck in conditioned mind is that we're not with the breath, we're not in the body, we're not present, and so the system is getting signals that there's something wrong or there's something to be anxious about, because you know the difference between taking a long, full breath and how that feels when you let it go and it's just kind of relaxing and, you know, difficult to feel stressful when you're exhaling fully.
Great.
But if we're not really with the breath, once again, then we're off maintaining a conditioned reality that's other than this moment.
Okay. Okay, very
Have
good.
Have I convinced you to breathe?
You convinced me to breathe all right. Huh? And that leads me to my second question, which is about forgiveness. And forgiveness of myself and others, and I'm not really feeling it. And some of the things I try are saying that our true nature is compassion, and I say that, and it doesn't necessarily help me to feel better about the person.
Right.
And also, does it make it? And then sometimes I say, "Oh, well, I'm just projecting my faults onto this person," but I don't think I entirely believe that, even though I try to believe it. And then I don't know. I think that's enough.
Yeah. So you're not really allowed to believe the things that would let the other person off the hook.
Yeah.
And in either side, right?
Right?
So our true nature is compassion, and the response to that is, so what, they still did what they did. Well, I'm just like that, too. I'm not really buying that. Yeah?
Right. And also, does it make a difference if they are continuing to do the behavior that's hurtful? You know, it's a little easier to forgive somebody when they've stopped doing it, but what about somebody when you cannot avoid being affected by them, but they...
And they're still doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
So does it make a difference?
Of course, for most of us it does, right? And the farther it is in the past, the easier it is to let go of, which for an awful lot of people comes down to nothing more complex than I have current things that I'm holding on to. You with me?
Yep, I'm going to turn up the phone just a second.
Okay.
Okay, it's a little soft. Okay, I'm with you.
All right, good. So something that happened to me 30 years ago, you know, maybe I really held on to it for the first 10 years or the first 20 years, and then it gets replaced by more current things.
Right.
Yeah? So
yes.
Here you are in really current things. This is something that has happened to you, and it's still happening to you. So for me, what it comes down to is it's not a matter of what somebody else is doing. It's who perceives it's being done to them.
I'm losing your sound. I don't know how to make it any louder, but it's getting soft.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
That's good, though. Now
okay.
It's good.
All right. And if all else fails, you might try to give us a call back.
Okay.
And we'll continue. But let's stay with it as long as we can, okay?
Okay.
Okay. So it's not so much what's going on out there. It's a matter of who is perceiving it.
Right.
And I would suggest, from what you have said already, that the person perceiving it is someone who doesn't want to let it go. Okay? So you say, well, you know, I'm like that too, and the person says, I don't care. I'm not forgiving him. Okay? Well, you know, maybe they really didn't mean to do that. I don't care. I'm not forgiving him. Well, you know, our authentic nature is compassion. I don't care. I'm not forgiving him.
It's occurring to me now as you say these things that the reason why is that I'm not very happy. I think if I was happier in general, I wouldn't even be thinking about this and I wouldn't care. It's only when I'm not happy that I think about these
things.
There
you go. Which again points us toward this is a specific part of you who is holding on to this, who tells the story, who makes the case. So, yeah, you go, you know, you're at the movies and you're having a really good time. And you're not thinking about this. And then you come out, and there's kind of nothing to focus on, and zoom, that person center stage grabs the microphone and says, let me tell you how I'm suffering.
Right.
Okay? Then you get distracted by something else. You feel good. You're with friends, whatever. It's not a problem. There's a blank space again. This person jumps in, grabs the mic, and says, this is what's wrong with that, and this is what that person did, and this is why I'm not going to forgive them.
Right.
Yeah. So you're catching on to the process of this.
Right.
And as you catch on to the process of it, what you'll begin to see, I predict, is that the content is just there to be taken advantage of by this person who wants to have a problem that is at the center stage.
The conditioned mind and the self-hate is just looking for something to
make you
use for ammunition, and that's handy.
That's right. That's a handy thing because, in fact, this person is doing something that you would rather they didn't do.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's legitimate, and I think that your point is the best one. So I'm driving down the road. I'm happy. I'm having a good time. Life is going my way. I feel generous. Somebody cuts me off. Oh, well, you know, I just kind of feel sorry for them. Whoa, must be a lot of stress in that car right now. I'm glad I'm not in there with them. Okay?
Right.
I don't care. Water off my back.
Right.
Okay? Then I'm going down the road, and life isn't going my way, and I'm not particularly happy, and somebody cuts me off, and I want to run them off the road and hurt them.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the content is the same. My process about it is completely different depending on what's going on with me and who's allowed to come in and take over conscious awareness and put their story in place of being here in the present.
Right.
Yeah. Now, none of this, of course, is a reason to get down on yourself.
Right. It gets to be so tricky that negative voice is just so... It's like a monkey. It's just so agile and willing to figure out the way to use anything against you. It's so tricky.
It is. It is. And to me, of course, what makes life really interesting and exciting is when you take up the game. So a few years ago when my grandson was of an age that this sort of thing was interesting to him, we would go play Laser Quest.
Right.
You know, it's like paintball, only it's just with laser.
Right.
And you go into these dark rooms and you go around and you find people and you hit them with lasers and you know. If people can get over all that, so violent, which it isn't, of course, because all you are is running around this dark room with little laser lights. It's really fun.
Uh-huh.
It's fun. It's fun trying not to get hit, and it's fun trying to tag somebody else.
Right.
Okay. If we take that same approach with awareness practice and conditioned mind, it's really, really fun. If we let conditioned mind give us an idea about how it should be and then keep score every time we're not the way we should be,
right.
Life is depressing.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, you get your little gotcha board. Okay, and on one side is me, and of course then you have to kind of put that in quotes because who the heck is that, right? And on the other side is conditioning. And then all day long you watch. When did you see it? Okay, one point for me. When did it completely bamboozle you? Okay, one point for conditioning.
Okay.
Get in the game.
Okay.
All right, great.
Okay.
And then let us know.
Okay, and thank you so much. I enjoy all your, I consider it such a great gift that you have the archives from the old radio show and your books, and you're going to be coming to Harrisburg in May, and we've got a Sangha in York, Pennsylvania, where I'm from, and we'll be coming up there, and they go up every year, and so we're looking forward to seeing you,
and
thank
you
so much.
And come up and say hello.
Okay, thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks.
Okay,
bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Julie. You're listening to Open Air with Cher Huber on World Talk Radio. It's another great show today. I'm excited to be here. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can give us a call at 1-888-514-2100. That's toll-free in the U.S. and Canada. Sherry, we have another caller. And before this caller, I just want to say that we might be nearing our break. So if we're going to take a break, we can continue the conversation after as well.
So you'll just give us a little music, and we'll know we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back.
Exactly.
And we won't miss a beat.
You won't miss a beat.
Whew.
I'd like to welcome Gordon from Oregon. You're on Open Air with Sherry Ewer.
Hello, Sherry.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing so well. It's so nice to talk to you.
Great to hear your voice.
I discovered your books earlier this year, and I've read three of them in about 2 months period of time, and they've had a very big impact on how I live, and I just wanted to take a moment and acknowledge you for having written them.
Well, thank you, sir.
I read That Which You Are Seeking Is Causing You to Seek.
Uh-huh.
The person you want to find, and how to get from where you are to where you want to be, and I'm anxiously waiting for a fourth book. I know I've got many to choose from.
Well, that's great.
I just relocated to a small town in sort of southern Oregon from Hawaii. And when I was reading your books in Hawaii, you talked about having some land or a home that you were building in Oregon. I'm just curious where that was.
Oh, it was out the Butte Falls Highway.
Okay.
Where are you in southern Oregon?
Well, I'm in Myrtle Creek, which is just south of Roseburg.
Oh, okay. So you know where Crater Lake Highway is?
Yes.
Yep, it was out there at the ends of the earth, in the middle
wow.
of nowhere.
That's interesting to me, but I guess that's another story. I'm now getting up early and spending a lot of time in meditation, which for me is typically
Lovely.
About a half hour to an hour a day, and it's made a big difference about how my reflexes are during the day in terms of acting from.
Yeah. It's wonderful, isn't it?
Awareness, yeah, from awareness or acting just from reflexes of conditioning that I've had in the past.
Yeah.
Occasionally, when I find that I'm judging others, I start to judge myself for being judgmental.
Yes.
And I guess I had two questions, and the first of which is the proper response to that to be curious about why I'm upset about judging myself, or how do I coach myself during the day when I find that I'm being judgmental? Do I just go to my breathing?
Well, like the previous call, there's so many ways to go with this, and I'm supportive of all of them, not all at once, but sort of sequentially, so you just get a chance to see everything that you can see about how all of this works.
Yeah.
So there you are, realizing that you're judgmental. One of the things that I like to do with that is follow that back. So if I say, she's such an attention getter. Okay, and then I would follow that back as a projection. Not that it's wrong of me to be doing that, to be saying that, because what I know is I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about something that goes on inside of me. So now there's a whole area in me. What is attention for me? What is attention getting? What does that? Why is that? Not why in an intellectual way, but just as a place to look. What about that is so upsetting to me?
Mm-hmm.
And as I pay attention, not going up into conditioned mind to let it tell me what is so about that, but just as I notice, insights will begin to come to me. Okay? So trying to get attention in my family was not a good thing. It was a sign that you were some sort of a lesser person. You meant to feel bad if somebody accused you of doing something to get attention. Blah, 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 blah. If I were doing what she's doing, that would be the way my family would have described what I was doing. And so when I see somebody else doing this thing that I got traumatized for doing, I treat them the way I was treated. So it's just this whole realm that can open up for us. And then if it feels like you sort of get that, okay, then you can just come back to the breath.
Yes. The follow-up question I would have to that, and I don't know if I have enough time to answer it, so I'll try to be quick. During the day, because I'm starting my day out on such a positive foot with some exercise and yoga and the meditation, I'm really enjoying my days, and I find that I'm getting lost in the tasks at hand at work.
Uh-huh.
I'm well received by my coworkers and my clients, and I don't often think about breathing. Or I'm not consciously aware of the lessons I'm learned in your books, for example, during the day. And it isn't until when things slow down in the evening do I find that I have space in my mind to consider certain things, typically.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, is that a good sign to get lost in the flow of life? Or is that
hey,
a way
Gordon?
Of egocentricity to trick me?
Yeah. Okay.
I hate to step in here. Can we continue quickly right after the break?
Can you hang on, Gordon, until we come back from the break?
Of course.
Okay, wonderful. We'll see you in a minute.
Great. You're listening to Open Air with Cher Huber on World Talk Radio. We'll be continuing our conversation on conscious compassionate awareness right after this break. Coming up next on Open Air, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious compassionate awareness in our second segment of today's show. So keep it tuned here for more of Open Air with Cher Huber on World Talk Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Cher Huber, and I hope we have Gordon still on the line here to continue our conversation.
Thank you.
Oh, sure. Great. Okay, so how to stay conscious during the day, and is it a good thing to get kind of caught up in what you're doing, and just it sounds like you're enjoying your life when you're doing that.
I very much am, and I notice that I'm much more relaxed. I have less physical, bodily stress, less emotional stress, and people enjoy working with me, and I feel really good about it. But sometimes I go from being calm, and then I know the pace quickens because there's a deadline approaching, or I realize that I have more work to do than I thought. And then I kind of go from being pacing myself like if you were jogging and you're not really breaking a sweat, and then sometimes you have to run fast.
Then you're in a sprint.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's not like that chronically, like every hour I'm doing it, but it's interesting because I have a new job, a new career, and I really want to take my practice with me
mm-hmm.
throughout the day.
Right. Well, here's what I would consider if I were you, and it's not because there's anything wrong or that there's anything that needs to be changed, but just that it can be fun to be in touch with yourself during the day. So to begin to build in reminders in your day, and here are some of my favorites. Always to do walking meditation when you walk anywhere during the day,
mm-hmm.
so even if it's just, I don't know what you do for a living, but it can be just from your desk to the restroom or, you know, to another place in the room. And always to train yourself to come back to your breath and feel your breath moving in your body as you're walking.
Yes.
Then you can do all sorts of things. Like, do you answer the phone during the day?
No, not that often. Maybe
oh.
that's one of my reasons for having so much peace of mind.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
From the outside world often.
Yeah. So something that reminds you just to come back in and check in with the breath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can even check in and remind yourself that this is great, or it's good to be alive, or something like that.
I enjoyed reading how you would count your breaths on long drives.
Right, back and forth to Oregon, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
So you can do that sort of thing, not as a way of taking yourself out of what you're doing, but more as a way of being consciously in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense to me, really.
Yeah. And I do things like, you know, I'll put a ring on a different finger or put my watch on the opposite wrist, or, you know, I'll put up a little note for myself somewhere. I'm a person, I'm doing a year-long email class now, and I like something to focus on every day. It's like playing a little game with myself to remind myself to be there and appreciate life and that sort of thing. So we have daily peace quotes, and you might sign up to get those. And then, you know, in the morning, there's the peace quote. And maybe that becomes something that you come back to during the day. Or people will do things like come back to center and take a long conscious breath every time they see a particular color. Or every time they do something that they repeat during the day. It reminds them to come back, take a long conscious breath, really be here, and then go back into the flow.
All of that's very helpful, and I might just leave you with a quick question about how I might participate in one of your email classes, because that seems very interesting to me.
Yeah, just go to the website, and I think there's everything there to tell you how to get hooked into all that stuff.
I'm very grateful for your time and attention. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Gordon. Take care of yourself.
Likewise.
Stay in touch.
I will. You can count on it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, Gordon, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. And Sherry, I just wanted to mention the website explicitly.
Okay.
And that is www.livingcompassion.org. It's great to be on the air today, and we have another caller. I'd like to welcome Raul from Los Angeles. Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello.
Hi, Raul.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I gotta pump up the volume here. I cannot hear you very well.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And I'll talk loud. How's that?
Okay, that's great.
Okay.
Okay.
What's going on today?
I had some issues with my mother, and right after that, I started reading your book and getting some help from friends and from professionals, and going to retreats. I'm a meditator. I've been meditating for a long time. But the stuff with my mother was in the background like a volcano, you know. It came out one day. And now I don't speak with my mother, and it's not that I don't speak. She doesn't come to my home. I don't call her. I have a daughter, so she has a granddaughter. When she calls, she ignores me completely. She leaves messages, you know, mentioning everybody but me. If I happen to pick up the phone, she will say, "Oh, it's you. It's your wife there." It's, you know, she kind of puts me aside, and I get so furious. And, you know, she was very abusive, and that stuff is there, and I have to deal with it. And sometimes, like, you know, days like this, I think I get lost, and I need some clarity.
Uh-huh.
Let me see. What can I ask? I don't want to ramble here.
Okay. May I just speak to some of that?
Sure.
Your response when your mother does these things is to get furious.
Yes.
Now, you've probably considered this, and it might still be a good reminder that anger is not actually a legitimate emotion. Okay, it's in the sense that it's a secondary emotion. There's always something underneath it. It's a reaction to a more primary emotion.
Okay.
And so the kinds of things that anger can be a reaction to, hurt, fear, sometimes disappointment. And so it's easy for me to project. If my mother treated me that way, it would hurt.
Yes.
It'd be really painful.
Yes. It is painful, I realize.
Yeah. And so is there a sense that maybe hurt is a more authentic emotion, and that the anger is really a reaction to that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, how old is your daughter?
She's three.
And how old do you think the part of you is who is reacting to being treated this way by his mother?
Yeah, probably 5-6 years old.
Yeah. And did she treat you this way when you were 5 or 6 years old?
Yes, I get the feeling that this is something I know of. I have experienced before.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's 5 or 6 years old or if it's in, 15 or 16, adolescence.
Yeah. See, I would guess that it's both. That there's a 5 or a 6-year-old whose feelings are really hurt. And who is... who's frightened by it as well. You know, this is not a normal, okay thing. Mothers aren't supposed to treat their children this way. So it's upsetting, deeply upsetting on a lot of levels.
Yes.
And then the 15 or 16-year-old says, probably with a lot of obscenities attached, I don't care.
Yes.
Yeah, and he's furious. He would like to...
I am furious and very frustrated.
Yeah, and he would like to retaliate. I mean, he's angry and he would like to get her back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost violent, you know.
No, I'm sure it is violent. Yeah.
But it's so... I don't know what, you know, how to resolve this because I can see all that you're telling me. But I have worked in therapy with issues like this with my mother and my father. And I was able somehow to come to a good place with my father,
mm-hmm.
with this. He's more humble. He's able to see, recognize where he made mistakes. My mother is very proud and just closed in and childish. I don't know. It's
okay.
And so for me, it's like, okay. Also, I have to swallow the hurt, maybe, of this is it.
Okay. Well, there are a couple of things that I would like to suggest about this. You've been meditating for a long time.
Yes.
And so you know what it's like to come to center.
Yes.
Okay? And can you remain at center a lot of the times with your daughter?
Yes, I would say so.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can watch how... you know, it's bad timing, you're stressed, whatever, she's nonstop. And there are times when, you know, you might start to feel that reaction rise up in you, and then you can breathe into it and just kind of drop it and come back to center for the most part.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
And sometimes, you know, I lose it, then I come back.
That's right. Nobody's perfect. I'm sure if the Buddha had small children, he would have struggled in the same ways, okay? Because they do have the ability to find nerves that nobody else can find.
Right.
Okay. But for the most part, you know what I'm talking about. You can stay in that conscious, compassionate place with her. Okay? And so what I'm going to suggest to you is that you practice staying in that conscious, compassionate place with that 5 or 6-year-old and with that 15 or 16-year-old. That in fact, from now on, you never let either one of those children interact with that woman.
With that woman.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay? That
yes.
The only person that you allow to interact with her is the conscious, compassionate part of yourself.
Yes, that's so hard.
It is so incredibly, outrageously hard. It is such hard practice, and you can do it. It's going to take some practice because you will have to think every time you pick up the phone. You'll have to stop and say, she could be on the phone. Stop and take a deep breath. Call in that centered mentoring part of yourself, you know, your most authentic meditator self, and then you answer the phone. And if it's her, you're prepared. You know what she's going to do.
Right.
Okay? The little kid isn't there. The teenager isn't there. You're breathing. Okay? And you do the best you can to stay in that centered place while she's on the phone.
Yes. Yes, I want to try that. I've been thinking about that because I heard your radio programs, and I see that that's your advice. Was it your advice for another woman that had similar situation?
Yeah. Yeah.
For example, she's, I found out through somebody else that she's, her position is like, okay, I have to go and apologize to her.
Uh-huh.
Because when we had that clash, you know, I insulted her.
Uh-huh.
Which is true.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, for me, the things that she did were so hurtful that the insult is just an anecdote.
Yeah.
And so when I think, let's say, I'm kind of picturing this situation that the best maybe that she could do is, I mean, for her, probably the best I can expect is that she would come and ask me to apologize for that. And I'm thinking, from center, I can say that, yes, you know, I shouldn't have said that, probably. I mean, that was hurtful. Yes, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I could, that's it.
Yes, from center.
And I'm thinking, wait, isn't that kind of perpetuating her own, you know, game?
Well,
of
here's
being,
the deal,
you know,
Raul.
I mean, here's, being very hurtful all along.
Yep, but here's the thing. This is what the Buddha taught. We must each work out our own salvation diligently. So who she is and how she is, whether she continues to suffer, whether she chooses to mend her ways by your, you know, and meet your standards of how she should be, it's really, the bottom line is, it's none of your business. It's how you are that matters. It's ending your suffering. It's coming to a place of freedom inside yourself, no matter what. That's the only thing you really have any ability to affect. So when you get to the place where all of the parts of you who have been wounded in this relationship are looking to you for care and nurturing. You know, they're not hoping for anything from her. They're looking to you. Okay? All of that stuff that has happened is healed inside of you. Then when you look at her, I would bet, I predict, you will see another suffering human being who may or may not ever decide to wake up and end suffering in this lifetime. You will feel compassion for her. She will be unable to affect you. And you would, in fact, do just about anything to make her life a little bit better. And the reason that you can do that and that you would want to do that is that it really has no effect on you whatsoever. Can you picture that?
Yeah, that's a very centering thought you're giving me there. That's very good.
Good. Try it out. Let me know how it works.
Okay.
And, Raul, it's practice. You know, you're not going to do it perfectly. It's not going to work every time. But every time you're going to get closer and closer to those parts of you who are suffering, those parts that you have the ability to heal and free.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Sherry.
Thank you. Take good care.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Raul. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Sherry, the calls are just stacking up here.
Isn't that a good thing?
It's a great thing. it's wonderful to hear from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And the courage and the willingness that I project onto everybody calling, it's great.
It's what Sangha is about, isn't it?
It is what Sangha is about. Mm-hmm. I'd like to welcome...
Excuse me just a moment, but I was thinking about that when we were talking with Raul, especially, you know, his situation is with his mother.
Yeah.
And yet, probably all of us have somebody that we're kind of in relationship like that with.
Uh-huh.
You know, somebody that we struggle with, somebody that brings up, you know. And so we can all apply what that way of looking at things. We can all explore whatever our issue is through the lens of whatever anybody else's issue is. And
mm-hmm.
That's why I love doing this work together.
Yes.
Yeah. Who you got?
I'd like to welcome Claire from Palo Alto. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Claire! Uh-oh.
Claire, are you there? I'd like to welcome Claire from Palo Alto. Are you there? All right, she's gone. We'll have to invite her to give us a call back.
Yes.
And we have another caller.
I'm here.
Oh, there she
is.
Great.
Oh, I am here. Have we connected?
We are connected.
Oh, great. That's great. So I wanted to share a two-layered way in which I suffer.
Michael, are you there?
I'm here. Claire, are you there?
Yeah.
Claire's there. Okay, let's try one more time.
Okay. I wanted to share a way that I see that I suffer.
Uh-huh.
And the layers within that. So I see that I suffer because I often look externally for, like, validation and comfort.
Yes.
And to know that I'm doing okay.
Yes.
And then, and I revisit this place a lot.
Uh-huh.
And then I see that when I do notice that I'm revisiting this place, I just beat myself up for not having, like, fixed it or got over it or... What, like, why am I here again often comes up with me.
Uh-huh. So first, you're looking outside for validation, for
right.
information that you're okay as a person.
Right.
And I would bet it took you a long time to notice that you did that.
It did, yes, it did.
Yeah, because that it does take us a long time to catch on that we're doing those kinds of things.
Right.
Then you catch on to it. And the information that you get is that that's not as good a way to do it as having internal validation, validating yourself.
Exactly.
Yep. So then when you find yourself looking outside for validation again, you get a beating for having done that because you've already seen it, so you should be over it.
Yes, indeed. Yeah?
Yeah?
I'm so wrong to keep doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah. Now, talk about a place where we can all relate. You know, the content is going to be different for different people. But that process of I'm doing something that I've always done, then I catch on to it, now I'm aware of it, and I get a beating for still doing something after I've become aware of it.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a great way for that... that egocentric karmic conditioning, that self-hatred, whatever, to stay in control.
Right.
So first we're taught to believe that we're not enough as we are and that we can't validate ourselves because we're not enough as we are. So, of course, we have to get validation from outside, which is what we've been taught from the time we left the womb.
Right.
Okay? We are taught to look to other people to tell us, was that good? Was that bad? Was that right? Was that wrong? So, you know, first it's parents and people close in the family, and then we go out to school and we look to teachers and then we look to peers and then we look to bosses and we look to, you know, I mean, the whole system is set up to get information about who and how you are from other people.
Right.
And then you catch on to that and say, wait a minute, why do I have to get this from other people? Now you're a bad person for doing that when you've been trained to do it from your first breath. Yeah? It's a bad system, isn't it?
Yeah. It's funny because, like, what comes up for me in this very moment is, like, this part of me is really here. Like, she wants to say to you, Sherry, is it okay if I do this for the rest of my life? Like, I'm looking to you to validate that it's okay that I keep doing this process.
Isn't that great? Yeah. And, of course, if we weren't having this conversation, and maybe even though we are having this conversation, she's going to get a beating for feeling that way, right?
Right, yeah.
So here's a little shortcut, okay, that I would encourage you to try because it just might work. And that is, every time you find yourself looking outside for validation, acknowledge to yourself that you have forgotten to validate yourself.
Oh.
So you can say, oh, thank you. I have forgotten to check in, haven't I?
Oh, and say something nice to myself.
That's right. So, oh, okay, I've forgotten to reassure myself, to take care of myself. So, of course, I'm looking to other people for that. Thank you for the reminder. I can give that to myself.
Hey, wow, that's really good, yeah. Because I notice that when I'm feeling very insecure, I do ask others for appreciations and validation.
Yes.
Like I'll actively go out and seek it, and if I see that as a flag, that I need to just, like, really come back to myself and give myself appreciations.
That's right. And then here's the second part of it for me. Get it from every source that you can as often as you possibly can.
Ah.
Okay? And the second part of that is give it as often as it occurs to you.
Wow.
Give it to yourself and give it to everyone around you.
Wow. Yes, because that's so cool because a part of me is really in scarcity around this.
Yeah.
To make it like a natural part of abundant life. Feels really good.
Oh, yeah. And almost everybody is in a place of scarcity about it. You know, everybody's running around doing everything they can to be the best person that they can, hoping that somebody is going to notice. Because, you know, it's not okay to say good things to yourself. That's arrogant, egocentric, conceited. You learned that from the moment you took your first breath as well. You've got to get it from somebody else. You've got to be really good so that you can get approval from somebody else. Okay?
Right.
So that's the whole karmic picture that we're up against. So now you can step over that and say, you know what? I'm going to, every time I see something in somebody else that I value or appreciate, I'm going to let them know. And I'm going to keep a really close eye on myself so that I can see every time I do something that I value and appreciate, you know, like breathing and walking around, I'm going to acknowledge that.
Wow.
And then I'm just going to live in a world of appreciation for everything inside and outside that is wonderful. And there is a bunch of it.
Well, thank you so much. That was very, very helpful.
I'm so glad.
Yes, yeah, deep gusto to you.
And to you for calling in.
Let's
try it out right now. So I really appreciate the fact that you are doing an awareness practice that causes you to see these things and that you are willing to call up and put it out there so that we can all benefit from what you're seeing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Take care of yourself.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for calling us. Listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, would you believe another caller?
Yeah.
All right. This one's going to have to be quick. And I'd like to welcome Janet from New Hampshire. You're on Open Air with
Janet.
Hello. Hi. I have 2 minutes.
2 minutes. So if we don't make it, you know what the number is for next week, right?
Yes, I do.
What's going on?
Well, I wanted to what I wanted to talk about was answered at least 100 times so far in this hour. And on Sunday we had a Zen dinner here at our house with a monk that had been at the monastery.
Yes.
And what I wanted to say about it was, before we had the dinner, My husband and I were getting ready, and, you know, before anybody came or anything, and, you know, we were disagreeing about everything, and everything was kind of, you know, I was thinking, oh, I can't believe we're doing this. We're just, everything's just so awful, blah, blah, blah. Then we have the time, and when it's over, I experience my husband in a completely different way.
He was clearly transformed by
the experience. He was transformed by the whole experience.
Don't you love that?
And I'm, you know, conditioning is like, this is so good for him. He's done, you know, the whole thing. And then I'm like, well, wait a minute, you know.
Huh.
Wait a minute.
Could something have happened to me during the course of this evening?
So then I started getting into, I've got to call in because this is probably projection, or I'm projecting out that he is da-da-da or this or that. And so it was going to be a whole question about, is it really him? Is it really me? What really happened? And then when you were talking to, I think, Raul, and you were saying, you know, you can't, it was like before the dinner, it was the 16-year-old who was getting ready.
Uh-huh.
It was a 16-year-old, I believe, yeah, rebellious teenager who was getting ready.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, it was the centered self that can be in relationship.
Yes.
Who was there?
Yeah.
And so you're, when you said what you spoke about with him could be applied to any relationship, I'm sitting here thinking, yes, because I've been thinking about this in the email class of summoning up the person who I want.
Yes.
Like in calling up for the radio show. Always when I want to call in, it's never me who ends up calling who first gets there. It's the, you know, 10-year-old, 8-year-old who's really scared to make the phone call.
Yes.
And so I have to consciously, you know, switch who's going to be calling.
Yes.
And so I'm seeing that in relationship, I really have to have my centered self be there in that relationship and call that forward.
Yes.
Every time I find the 16-year-old trying to be in a conscious relationship.
Yes. 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 Exactly so. And that, I mean, you don't want a 16-year-old in relationship with your husband under any circumstances. Right? Now, there might be times when his 16-year-old and your 16-year-old would like to go out on a date. Okay, that could be very fun. And you still want to keep a little conscious awareness going, right? Because 16-year-olds can be volatile and rebellious, as you say, and all of those kinds of things. So to allow folks to be there, but always with a larger perspective surrounding it.
So, yes. And so in just talking right now, I'm feeling like I'm backtracking. Like there's somebody hearing this and thinking, yes, but there has to be something else. I don't even know what I'm trying to say right now.
In other words, what I'm encouraging is not that you always have to be the centered self in your marriage.
Yes, okay.
You always want conscious, compassionate awareness to be there. You don't want to leave conscious, compassionate awareness, identify with some young part of yourself, and just go unconsciously into that young person, because then you get the experience you had as you were putting the dinner together.
Right.
Where you get, probably, realistically, you could check with him at some point. Of course, he might say, oh, no, I was completely centered through the whole thing. And then you have to, you know, go, no, he wasn't. he might say,
no,
yeah.
We've already checked in about it.
Yeah, he might say, oh, yeah, I wasn't much of a grown-up either.
Right.
So you don't always have to be complete grown-ups but you never want to lose conscious compassion and awareness. That's what we're striving for.
I got it.
Yeah.
That's
great.
Okay, thank you. Sherry, thank you so much for doing this radio show and for everything.
It is our pleasure, as you can imagine.
Thank you. Gosho.
Take care.
Bye.
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 Bye, Michael.
Bye, Janet. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been another fabulous show, Sherry.
Yes. Next week, maybe we'll get to some email questions and tell people about some bookstores and yoga centers that are joining us. And, but for this week, it couldn't have been more fun.
Yes, absolutely. I'd like to thank all of our listeners and all of our callers today. If you want to reach us when we're not on the air, you can send an email to openair@livingcompassion.org. And we'll talk to you all next week. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Good night.